My name is Mike Labors. I'd like to convene for the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number One, a special and joint meeting with Fire District Three Board of Commissioners. Today's date is Tuesday, April 2nd, and the time is 5 p.m. sharp.
I'd like to call a special meeting together for the San Juan Island Fire Department Commissioners. Today is April the 2nd, at 5 p.m. I'm now going to call our meeting to order. At this time, we should look for
introductions.
Well, let's go ahead and
you want to move
put a chair on.
Okay, so I proffer a motion, again representing PhD, that we do as we have in previous joint meetings, nominate Chairman Jarman, representing both the PhD as well as Fire District 3. Is working here?
Second,
okay. Proper motion. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Hey. Yeah, aye.
Okay,
Frank says aye.
Yeah.
We need a motion.
Yeah,
exactly.
Go ahead and call for.
So, I'd like to make a motion that we elect Bob Jarman as joint chair for PMS and or for hospital district and fire joint meeting.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second on the floor to elect Bob Jarman to be the chairperson for the joint meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously.
Congratulations.
Okay, thank you. So, let's go through some introductions for the group. I believe everybody knows us at the front table. And at this time, Nathan, would you introduce the CAG group for us, please?
Sure. Happy to. My name is Nathan Butler. I work for the hospital district. It's been my privilege to work with the Citizens Advisory Group over the last year in an administrative support role. Each of these members are incredibly capable people. Each of them brought something unique and special to the table. On my far left, we got Dan Paulson, and then we've got Mark Tompkins, Chuck Daldorf, Rick Frazier, and then George Johnson. And there's further bios in the report, and last time we introduced everyone more thoroughly. So
that's good enough. And I'd also like to welcome our esteemed mayor this evening. Glad to have you, Farr.
Thank you.
And Duncan Wilson as well.
Don't forget.
You don't have to welcome.
That's a smile on his face.
And I'm sorry I missed you, Duncan. And Duncan Wilson here representing the town as well, and his boss right alongside of him. With that being said, I'd like to turn the floor over to our CAG group, Chuck, to. We've been all waiting with bated breath for the report to be released. We waited till the end of the month, and here we are, the 1st of April. So we're excited with bated breath. Wait to hear you guys' report.
Well, thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members. The Citizens Advisory Group, we did promise the last time we met that we would deliver a report with recommendations to you at the end of March, and we're pleased to be here with our report for your review. And we worked, as we mentioned last time at the last meeting, we worked in a very comprehensive, collaborative manner to really analyze not just the question of the basic question that you tasked us with, which was the integration potentially of EMS services with fire services, but we really spent a lot of time thinking about the future, thinking about what's the direction of emergency services, the best services that we as a community can provide our residents, not just today, but definitely looking over the next 5 to 10 years. We wanted to look at this in a way that we would think about services and finances that would be sustainable. So it's not a matter of just putting two organizations together in the short term. This has never been an issue of who wears what patch, or what decal goes on what car, or what vehicle. This has really been this comprehensive view of emergency services for our community into the future. I appreciate all of your cooperation and support during this effort. We did take a lot more time than initially I think you would task us with, but we really did want to do this as in-depth as possible and leave you with a work product as you make your decisions going forward on what's best for the community, with something that I hope will help expedite your own process regardless of the direction you decide to go in, and have something that is going to be helpful to you as a tool. I would like to thank Nathan Butler for his support through this process. Nathan was an incredible asset for us. I think we would really struggle as a group. We would still be sitting around with super glue, looking at the instructions on page one, trying to figure out what tab goes where without Nathan's help. And Nathan, we really appreciated it. Thank you so much. And I'd also like to quickly recognize Karen Augusta, who helped us when it came time to put this document together. We had all of the component pieces, but the actual assembly of this was extraordinarily difficult and complicated. And we wanted something that was readable and something that was easy to understand, not just for us, because God knows we need very easy to understand things, but for anybody who picks up this document and goes through it. And I really appreciate Karen's help and assistance. As a volunteer, you spend a ton of hours on this, and thank you. Thank you for your help.
Thank you.
So we're going to make, I'm going to read through the base recommendation, and then I'm going to ask each of our colleagues on the Assistance Advisory Group to add in on different portions of the recommendation to kind of fill in the gaps for you. The CAG's basic recommendation is that within the next 2 years, the two boards, San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1 and Fire District Number 3, and the Town of Friday Harbor, with the support of the San Juan County Council, will integrate San Juan Island EMS and Fire Department Number 3 into one organization with a single leadership structure. Now I'm going to ask Mark Tompkins if, Mark, you would go ahead and fill in the gaps and talk about the absolute conditions of the recommendation.
Sure. So this recommendation comes with, as Chuck said, some what we call absolute conditions. So these are conditions that we felt were important enough and strong enough to that in order to move forward with this, you need to incorporate these conditions. Otherwise, we would maybe have a different recommendation if you didn't move forward with these conditions. And those include you have cross-chain staff. And what we mean by that is that all full-time paid staff are duly qualified as firefighter paramedics or firefighter EMTs. These are the full-time staff. These are not your volunteers or paid-on-call staff. So they're the full-time staff duly qualified as firefighter paramedics and firefighter EMTs. We recognize that not all staff currently have those dual qualifications, so we're recommending there's a grace period for those staff to achieve those certifications if need be. This does not include administrative support staff, so this would just be the line staff. The second piece of that would be that these paid full-time staff would be station-based. So you would be running out of the station, and that'd be 24/7, and there'd be a team of staff consisting of a firefighter paramedic and a firefighter EMT. That a capital equipment plan be developed, a five-year capital equipment plan be developed, that looks out long-term on what the capital needs are for both operations. We feel very strongly that metrics need to be developed and reported monthly to the board and to the public on an annual basis. Those metrics need to include not only just run times, but outcomes, and financial metrics, and we have a whole chapter on the metrics in the back of the report. The medical program director or designee needs to be intimately involved with the board and come to the board meetings on a quarterly basis to ensure that the medical standards are being met for patient outcomes. Also, an operation budget that has a separate fire EMS operational budget be developed. so that you can track both the revenue and operational expenses for both operations. And then finally, that the fire district board be expanded from 3 to 5 members. And that is for a variety of reasons, to include not only allowing two members to be able to communicate to one another, but also increase representation and open it up so that the folks within the town can nominate somebody as well. With that, I'm going to turn it over to George Johnson, who will discuss implementation recommendations that will feed into some of these as well.
Thank you. Without going over any of that again, I'll just talk about how thick this report is, because you've probably noticed. And that's because there's a whole lot of detail in here, which we felt was worth transferring to you. Since we did all that research, you might not have to do it again. Also, for the benefit of any of the public who ask for and get this document, it might be useful to fill in some of the details on how you do some of these things that we have learned. Elections, levies, what the boundaries are, licensing. There's all kinds of stuff going on here. As was said earlier, you don't just drive the trucks over here and peel the label off the door and put something different on it. It's a whole lot more than that. And it takes a few legal processes, which revolve largely around money. So we should talk about that first. There is an EMS levy. It belongs to the hospital district. You can't move it. They own it. If you want a levy in the fire district, it's a new levy. So what we would like to do is look down the road, as we said earlier, and what would be the ideal scenario a few years from now? And the answer is simply, do it as easy as possible. Make it one levy, one district, and a merged department of EMS and fire. And there are a couple of issues, obviously, looking between here and there that you have to go through. That's the implementation part of this. The first is the big hole, which is the town of Friday Harbor, that doesn't exist in the fire district, but does exist in the EMS levy. And our suggestion, of course, then, first and foremost, is, well, if you're going to have one levy for both fire and EMS, it needs to include the town. Now, there are other paths you could go, but the best thing to do is to just annex the town. Then you can apply the fire slash EMS levy to the town without having to go through contracts, which you currently have, because the town of Friday Harbor contracts for fire. And of course, they could contract for EMS too. But that's a complicating factor. You could either have a separate interlocal for EMS as well as, or you could merge it into the existing interlocal agreement. That's ridiculous. Just annex the town. Now, the hope is that the town who would vote for this, as well as the fire district, who have to vote for that, would approve it. Because that's an electorate question that has to go out to the voters. Other easy thing is, don't have a second EMS levy. Just do a lid lift for the fire levy, enough to cover it. Our recommendation, strong recommendation, is that that number that you pick for the lid lift not exceed the current EMS levy, whatever that is at the time, so that it's revenue neutral to folks in the fire district. You know, I'm paying an EMS levy and I'm paying a fire levy. If the total of those is the same as the fire district lid lifted number, it doesn't matter to me how the money gets sorted out. And that's way easier than the hospital district collecting a levy and sending it to the fire district so they can afford to do EMS or any of the other choices that you'll see we looked at in here. So the best answer is, first, annex the town. Second, do a lid lift for both town and fire district now, because they're one, to cover the EMS. And at whatever moment in time the EMS levy needs to go away because the fire levy lid lift hits, there's a continuation of funding without any break. There's no difference in the dollar amount. The issue for the town of Friday Harbor, of course, is they pay for the contract for fire out of the general fund, which is funded from all kinds of sources, not just property tax. So the lid lift would be a property tax rate increase for residents of the town, property owners in town. And the town of Friday Harbor has to figure out then, are they going to reduce the property tax rate that they take, so the town's property tax goes down by the same amount of the increase in the fire levy, so it's revenue neutral to the town, or is there some difference there? And that will be up to the town to decide. We haven't made a recommendation on that. Because if they don't cut property taxes in town by the same amount as the lid lift from the fire district, that represents a tax increase to the property owner in town. So those are the first issues. And then the obvious answer is the EMS levy doesn't actually go away. Our suggestion is the hospital district board just says we're taking zero on the day that the fire district lid lift hits. And that's how you continue the funding for EMS without a break. We spent a lot of time on this, but I'm going to spend less time here. On the subject of outer islands and the fact that EMS district for their boundaries don't coincide directly with fire district boundaries. So there are islands beyond just San Juan, Pearl, Henry, whatever, Brown, whatever the fire district is. There's all these Spiden, Johns, Jones, and other islands that are included in the hospital district. And we were concerned about one of the criteria. I'm not sure if I heard Mark say this. We don't want to reduce levels of service. One of the criteria here was we've got great EMS. Whatever we do, you know, Hippocratic oath time, do no harm. So we don't want to see anything reduced in the way of service levels. And one of the things that was a concern is, what about those folks out there who are getting, who are paying for EMS now and get the best they can get on an outer island, which means jump in the sheriff's boat or whatever, run out there, fire boat, and hopefully get there in time to do some good. What we learned from Katie Holstein, who was nice enough to come up from Olympia, who was the EMS director for the Department of Health of the state, is that your service areas don't have to align, per se, with your district boundaries. You can tax this group, and you have to provide service to them, but you could also include a service area over here that isn't paying taxes, but they're in your response area. And we also did the math on annexation and all the rest of that to see if maybe these outer islands should vote to join in the hospital, in the fire district or in an EMS district or whatever. There are 55 voters on all of those other islands outside of the fire district, but inside the hospital district, so paying the EMS levy. And they get maybe a call or two a year outside of the fire district boundaries. So we have decided it's de minimis. We can argue in front of any state auditor that it doesn't matter. It's too small to waste time on. We're not spending that much money. We're not, you know, collecting that much money. We're not required to do the alignment of boundaries for response area and district levy boundaries. So I would say include it in the license exactly the way it is now for EMS when it's in the fire district. Just keep the same response area so that they're covered just the way they are currently when it's a fire district EMS response. And it won't cost you much. It'll cost you a call a year or something. It's not a problem. And the auditors are not going to bother you about that. So that was one of the biggest things we spent time on, that we were scratching our heads at the end, and I think we've come to a reasonable conclusion. Half of the islands you see under, this is page 12, where it describes the difference in the islands, half of those islands are tax-exempt property. I don't even know why they're in a taxing district. You know, it makes no sense. Anyway, so, yeah, this all falls into the category. We're just moving on. So that is our assumption on the details of that. The whole second part of the book will tell you all of the steps to take, and we can go into that if you have questions about it. But I don't have enough time to go on into chapters 5, 6, 7. You do need a separate license, though, because you can't move the license from one agency to the other either. So you need a license, and that was another thing we learned from Katie. They're doing their North Regional Council review for the next 5 years right now, and it's due to be done by June 1st, I think, something like that. So it would be a good idea, if you're going to do this, if you guys decide to do this, give them a heads up that the license is going to be different so that they can expect a license application. It's not hard to do, but it has to be done. And if they had that before they do their next five-year plan, it would be better. So that's a suggestion from Katie Holstein, basically. All right? That's all I had.
All right, and then Rick, would you discuss the benefits of the recommendation?
Sure. I think, you know, the Citizens Advisory Group went into this with a bit of a recognition that from healthcare and from fire, that the organizations independently are doing a pretty good job. Just like any organization, there's always challenges and issues. But at the street level, at delivering care to patients, at working fires, that they are clearly performing well. So then how do we benefit bringing them together? What really is the impetus for doing that? Because, of course, you've got two organizations, just the melding of them is going to present challenges, and nobody knows what the outcome is going to be. It could be worse than, which we certainly do not hope to. We really hope better than. And I think there is great opportunity. And it really revolves around, you know, three or four areas. And so to try to sum those up operationally, the recommendations that kind of Mark gave in kind of what we would perceive as absolutes to the recommendation on staffing, on location and so forth, is really to try to enhance response times and try to make the organizations provide to the residents a better product. And it looks like there's opportunity to do that. A lot of it revolving around, because it's the same workforce, volunteers now are becoming cross-trained, and almost a great proportion of the fire's volunteers and the EMS volunteers are one and the same. And so as they are trying to divide their times right now, they have to go, okay, am I fire today or am I EMS today? It's clear that healthcare and the core and the fundamental activities around it is very different than the core and fundamental activities around fire. But because of the emergent nature of it, because of the fact that in many instances they respond to the same type of call, why they're collaborating. So where do we get benefits? So we can get benefits in command structure. We can get benefits in training. We can get benefits in the volunteer personnel not having to decide, well, do I go to EMS today? Do I go to fire today? By working collaboratively, they now are part of a single organization. So we found that benefits. We don't have a lot of resources. The county, as we all recognize, does not have a lot of resources, has to do much of what it has to do on its own. So by minimizing the volunteers having to make a decision, we felt that would be a good value. So operationally, better response times, maybe better organization. Personnel-wise, definitely from a volunteer standpoint, definitely from interacting, definitely from training, definitely from a command environment when they're at a scene. And then also financially, which is big, let's face it. Again, nobody is has a spigot that is just a constant run. You have to look at the finances and you have to ensure that you have a healthy organization, a sustainable organization, and you can try to at least not do any harm, as George mentioned, not have any reductions as we go forward, and hopefully come away with it. Now, interestingly, that we didn't reach far out, but within the county, there's another organization that is collaborative in nature, fire and EMS together, and they're actually operating in their combined budget against what a combined budget would be here of over $1 million less than what the two combined budgets would be here. Now, that's kind of subjective, okay? And their sustainability and their capital and all that kind of looking at it, you know, without drilling down, it doesn't necessarily say that by consolidating, you know, there would be $1 million benefit. But there's probably a potential benefit in the financial side, in bringing the organizations together, just from operational, potentially from personnel. And we put that into, we did the comparative in the document. You're going to have somewhere around 18 personnel that would be full-time. The other organization's operating under 12. So do you need more personnel? These are all the things that you as management and as leadership is going to have to make your determinations. You're going to have to look at maybe what consolidated expenses would be. And are there areas, in insurance or in communications dispatch or in operational expenses and so forth to be able to consolidate? That's kind of why we looked at the recommendation, as George mentioned, about if there's a lid lift, not to exceed at least what would be the consolidated expenses going forward. So we looked at it from an operational standpoint, from a financial standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, and I think that pretty much covers it, other than maybe a simplified process, as George went through and discussed with you about what the opportunities might be as you consolidate, to look at a single levy, to look at single licensures, to look at the election process when you have to go back out to the community as an emergency response system. You're not dealing with two levies, you're dealing with one levy. You're maybe dealing with less components. And so to the residents, to the community, it might be a more simplified process. But again, the benefits are all about what you and how you execute. And at the end of the day, where the dust settles, the integration happens, and the value comes away to the residents. And I think with that in mind, there's one other presentation.
Dan, would you talk about the recommendation in the context of best practices review and some of the work that you particularly did?
Right. Following along with Rick is talking about, Mark and I met with many chiefs around the state, from Whatcom County, Skagit, Snohomish, Anacortes. I was meeting with the chief who was originally in Phoenix and was actually working on structure, EMS structure throughout the country. And these are, we talked with them, what are the benefits that you're actually realizing by moving or having EMS under your fire district? Empirically, what do you guys say? And these are some of the responses we have from these guys. Mark and I, we found that there's a nationwide trend to merge EMS and fire, period. That's right now across the country. Most EMS systems are merged with fire. And some of the benefits that these people are realizing are better utilization and depth of resources. Since paramedics, EMTs, and firefighters staff both ambulances, fire engines, they now have the ability, if needed, to put more ambulances on the road at any given time. And decisions are based on call volume and demand. In addition, they're able to craft responses to maximize results. And accountability and quality assurance has been big to all of these folks. In Mount Vernon, they now have a better command and control over operations, and has put in place better accountability measures related to narcotics and handling and quality assurance reviews. This incident command and chain of command has been big with everybody that we talk with. They're built right into the system. This is an underrated benefit of fire-based systems. And on every call in every situation, there's someone in charge with a clear chain of command. As the incident grows and contracts in personnel or complexity, the chain of command and incident command systems change smoothly. By contrast, in many EMS agencies, there is no clear chain of command and no clear group leader, and they have little emphasis on incident command training. The benefits to the safety of personnel and citizens created by this chain of command cannot be overstated. This is a big deal with many people to talk with. The economy of scale, we've talked about this. This is a big deal. Medicare reimbursements in Skagit County, they found that there's a decrease in Medicare reimbursements if the EMS was owned by the hospital. Moving under fire, this changed substantially. Training and morale, cross-staff training has shown efficiencies in budgets and also been very good for departmental morale and has helped with the recruiting of new volunteers. Training, continuing education, call review, and quality assurance are now more closely monitored and coordinated. Also, by having the paramedics, EMTs, and firefighters staffing stations 24/7,
They're using standby time, utilizing this for education, training, and planning, as well as having quick out-the-door response time. On San Juan Island, over 60% of our calls, EMS calls, are in the town. Having that station, everybody's stationed right here, is to the benefit of everybody. Skagit Valley, as of January 1st of this year, moved everybody out of what used to be the Central Valley Ambulance System, and they moved this out into the fire districts less than half a year ago. Talking with Chief Sergeant and the people over there, how this has gone, they said it's gone very, very smoothly. They expect this year might be a wash financially. Next year, they expect to see big improvements financially. Morale is up. Everybody's doing well, and everybody's very happy with the situation. It just happened. Two of the reasons that this happened were the county commissioners and the hospital board were concerned about their own liabilities and risk by managing this. That was a big factor in their decision. And another thing that's going on across the country is rural fire authorities, RFAs. I'm sure some of you are familiar with those. We're not recommending that by any means at this point. But that is a big deal going across the country now. A lot of people are doing this. In San Juan County, what it would mean is all the county would come under an RFA and merge and have further efficiency, personnel, cross-training, all the way up the ladder, you can see this. We're not recommending it again. There's a lot of benefit to it. The first step to starting an RFA is to have EMS work under fire. So by doing so, it's a first step. Maybe this comes down the road, something to explore.
So, Mr. Chairman, we're presenting this report to you and the members. This is really a foundation document. I mean, at the end of the day, you're the implementers. You'll be working with your CEOs to move this forward, hopefully. What we have down necessarily in paper as you get into implementation may not equate to what you need to do going forward. But we think what we've been able to do is at least provide you with a foundation, hopefully, for your analysis and possible consideration moving forward. I know we as a group, we were very honored to do this work, and we thank you for allowing us to participate in this discussion. And whatever you decide to do going forward, we hope that it will include an extensive amount of conversations and dialogue with the community, because in the end, that's what we're all here to do. We're all here to serve our voters and our residents and our taxpayers and provide them with the best, most affordable emergency care services that we can provide. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chuck. Speaking for myself, and I'm probably speaking for all the board members, we want to thank you for all the time and effort that you people put in to putting this report together. It's a very thorough report. I was giving George a little bit of a dig before we got started here. When we started out, when we were looking at the town of Friday Harbor contracting with the town of Friday Harbor, that report was probably 12 pages. This report is 117 pages. It's a lot different. It's a lot more thorough. It was very well done, very well thought out. It gives recommendations for pass forward. It gives recommendations that are thought out, well thought out. And once again, you guys did a wonderful job. And at this time, we'll open up for a discussion between the board members, and I want to invite Duncan into the discussion as well. Do you have any questions for the CAG? I'd like to put you on the spot right off the bat, Duncan.
No, it's okay. I'm sort of used to it. First of all, I want to thank the CAG for the amount of work that they did. This is they went above and beyond where I thought the report would go. It's very well written. There's a lot of material here, and a lot of the considerations that I was worried about have been covered in one form or another. The only concerns I have with the report are in a couple of locations where the representation was, this is sort of minute stuff, but representations that the town pays for its fire service from the property tax, which is not entirely true. We pay for our fire service from multiple sources of revenue that we have, including property tax, including sales tax, including any of the other state revenues we receive. So it comes from, we have some of the monies that are used for this come from the public safety tax that is the 0.3 sales tax that's imposed. So we have multiple sources, and on page 35, it's represented that it's funded from property tax alone, and that really isn't accurate. Secondly, on page 49, I would say that the town has taken the position from the very beginning, and that we've long stated that what we want to do is what's in the best interest of the community. We have not stepped into the decision-making and attempted to influence or comment on what the fire district should do or what the hospital district should do in making their decisions here. We've sort of stayed back and said that we are willing partners to step forward and do what needs to be done to implement this if, in fact, that is your choice. And we still have that position. The town has to run an election that passes. We have to find a way to put this out to our voters and the county voters to a lesser degree. But we have to put it out to our voters in a way that would allow this to pass. There are benefits and there are detriments to going forward with the vote. Although I think that the benefits outweigh the detriments. The fact that people will have representation and be able to vote for their fire commissioners is a benefit that is sometimes overlooked. We want to see our people have the right to vote for the people that are running the fire district. But there's also the side of it that this would increase individual property owners' taxes by a certain degree, because the town has been covering that up till now. We have been having to find the money in our various resources to pay for the fire service out of our revenues, as opposed to having it taxed on the property tax like everybody else on the island. So we have to find a way to have that work. But we also have the duty to the people in the town to jealously preserve our property tax, because that is the most solid revenue source that the town has on an ongoing basis that is protected against inflationary issues or downturns in the economy. We have to preserve that property tax to protect the town operations going into the future. So there is a combination there, and there has to be a solution out of it. The town council and the mayor have proposed some ideas as to what may work to help promote this, and we will promote it to the extent that we can when the vote comes up. Once we've established the vote to go forward, the town can no longer be involved in promotion of this. It has to be turned over to some type of a committee. So we'll be looking to the community to step forward and to support this and to go door to door, to talk to people, to make sure that if this is the right thing, this is the first step in having this occur, if that's what your decision is, that we're going to need some assistance from everybody in doing so. We have one of the lowest property taxes in the state here in town. And we also don't have a utility tax, which makes us highly unusual in the state of Washington. And we are proud of the fact that we do not have high taxes and are able to make the town operate. But on the other hand, we cannot give up portions of our taxing authority entirely. But we think there are some options that will work, and we stand willing to assist you in that process as we go forward. We need the support of everyone in this room in that process of taking this to the voters, because it's not going to be an easy task, as was mentioned in the report. But we stand behind you based on your decision on what to do here. If your decision is that this is the best move forward, the town will be there to support you, and we will take forward anything we need to do to help you implement the entire plan. All we're asking in return is that you support us and the town council when they make their determination as to how to make this work for the voters. Because any type of bickering or infighting about the best way to do that is only going to harm the ultimate implementation if that is what you want to have happen. So I offer these comments up to tell you and make sure and to reemphasize. And I don't mean to speak for the mayor, because he can smack me at any time. But I think that the town does stand ready to help this happen if this is what you feel is in the best interest of the overall community. And we want to be a partner with you.